Coming up next, we're going to check in with Logan Whitehurst. They talk to him about what he's up to, what he's done, and play a heck of a lot of his music, starting off with this piece. This song is called Do the Confusion. You're listening to Jen Cork on WRFU LP Urbana 104.5 FM. Do the Confusion.
Thank you. Can I get you something from the kitchen? Some cake, perhaps some coffee?
Sounds good to me.
See how you like this rifle barrel over your head? Oh! And now I'm getting out of this crummy joint once and for all.
The Swiss Miss and Mister until you disappear. You can find the time to imbibe wine and ride the lines. You can rhyme with the best kinds of lines, and the swine reclines as the mind tries to climb its line. Or you can do the confusion till your head falls off. Blow your nose in your overcoat. Do the confusion till your head falls off. Your head falls off.
Stop me. Stop. Stop this craziness. You're destroying my toy.
See the people with the sweetmeats. She is a treat when you meet discreetly beneath the sheet. You can beat the heat on Easy Street when you're cheating completely. Please repeat. Beep, beep, I'm a Jeep till the creep asleep in the cheap seat believes he's Meryl Streep with a deep need to eat sheep's feet in a cream of wheat. Do the confusion till your head falls off. Blow your nose in your overcoat. Do the confusion till your head falls off. Your head falls off.
Running out the back door, he races up the fire escape to the roof.
I remember you now, and I'll put you behind bars again, just the way I did 6 years ago.
Oh, no, you won't, Bert Brink.
Logan Whitehurst right there with Do the Confusion. That comes from his latest CD from 2003, Goodbye My Four Track. Logan, you with us?
Yes, yes.
Can you hear me all right?
I think so.
Good. Well, good. It is great to have you on the show.
Thanks.
It is good to hear from you. Logan and I talked for the on a show that I had previously about 4 years ago, so it's been a very long time since we had a conversation, and a lot has changed in 4 years. So you play pretty much everything on your tracks. Your artist title officially is Logan Whitehurst and the Junior Science Club, but there is no club. It's all you.
Right. Well, pretty much, yeah, it's just me. Now, I like to say that, you know, all the people who listen to the music and all the people who make guest appearances on the albums are all members of the Science Club.
Gotcha.
As well.
No, but you play the drums, the keyboard, the concertina, and you do all the vocals. Sometimes you play the bass and the guitar and the accordion, and you have dabbled in the nose flute, the banjo, the harp, the timbale, and the lobster?
Yes. especially the lobster.
Good. You got a very eclectic background. How did you get into all of those instruments? Is it once you do one, it's kind of easy to pick the rest of them up? Seems very time consuming.
I don't know. I think what it is a combination of the luck of having a musical sense and a mechanical sense at the same time. It's kind of scientific that way, I guess. I kind of understand instruments, you know, and resonances and frequencies and tones and harmonics and things like that.
You're in tune.
Haven't really studied any of the instruments, so I'm certainly not a practiced or classically trained musician in any respect.
You're pretty good at a lot of stuff, though. You're good at the instruments, and it says here you learned to read in 1980. You would have been 3.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yeah, I learned to read. I was reading by 3, maybe before. I know I helped teach my sister how to read, and she was about a year and a half younger than I was.
Wow. Were you reading Melville, or was it still One Fish, Two Fish at that point?
You know, I didn't see much Dr. Seuss until I was older, but it was a lot of, I think there was a publishing company called Price something or other. I can't remember. It's like the they just had a whole series of children's books by different authors, and my parents subscribed to this service, and so they got new children's books all the time, and I was always reading something new.
But then your reading experience culminated. You went to the National Spelling Bee when you were what, 13, 14?
You know, that was 1990, so yeah, like 13.
Do you remember the word?
I was either 13 or 12.
Do you remember the word you went out on?
Odontoloxia.
Can you spell it?
O-D-O-N-T-O-L-O-X-I-A.
2 points. Nice. Yeah. It says you went out in the second round. Now, how disappointing is that? Like, I don't know if that would be disappointing because you made it that far, but you go all the way to Washington, D.C. from Los Baños, California, where you are from.
Right.
And you spell 2 words and then you're done. How was
it? You know, I was thinking about it at the time as I was walking off the stage, and they rang their bell and they said, no, that's incorrect. And I was walking back to the room where they, like, you know, have crackers and bottled water and stuff for the kids who get out. And they have, like, a counselor lady in there because some of the kids just kind of lose it emotionally. And
like a psychologist?
Yeah, and, you know, she didn't really even need to talk to me because I was like, oh, well, this is good because now I don't have to be here for the next, like, 3-4 days in the hotel doing the competition. I can go to the Smithsonian, I can go to the monuments and go and just see this downtown Washington, D.C. area. And, you know, because I was there with my mom and my sister and my youngest brother, and we were just kind of
got to hang out, got to
chill. Yeah, now we had time because now I can say I've been to the Smithsonian.
Yeah, and you can say that you did the National Spelling Bee, but you didn't even have to spell that much. I think that's the way to do it. Just put in the least amount of effort possible once you get there, and then you got it on your record forever.
Yeah,
well, that's great.
I was like, I'm here. I don't care anymore.
Exactly. That's great. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about your career and all the music you've put out. But first, a quick word from our sponsor, and we will be back with Logan Whitehurst on WRFU LP Urbana.
Hey, man. Is that Sparkle, man? Yeah, man. Well, turn it up, man. Ah!
Farkle! Yes, friends, Farkle is back, and it's giganticker than ever. Just look at these new features! All factory interior, rechargeable synchro adapter pack, big green override switch, and much, much more! Like a drink holder, two-tone carbide entryway, flannel partridge, yellow telephone, automatic G. Williker axle box, and much, much more! Like American Sunday Rockabye handkerchief. But wait, there's more! Like the Generation Front Page laptop hello bottle cap. Now Farkle has it all, and more! Like the limited edition signed by Elvis himself, doorbell handshake, whistle tub, skydiving monkey. Can you get more in the store? Yes, but wait, there's more! But you've already heard it. Let's go to the phones to see what people completely unlike yourself have to say about Farkle. Hello?
Hi, I like Farkle.
Thanks for calling. Hello?
Hi, I like Farkle.
Thanks for calling. Hello? Hello? Hold on a second.
Hello?
Hi, I like Farkle.
What the?
And other hits by your favorite artists. Yes, friends, this year the old Farkle just got turned to the side a bit. And here's the story of Farkle as told by our celebrity spokesfigment, John John the Leprechaun.
I'm John John the Leprechaun. Top of the morning to ye and your kin. Why, when it comes to Farkle, there's only one story, and it goes like this. Stretching my vocal cords for you. How do you like it? Now, the story of Farkle goes like this. Once upon a time, in the Ek Erebus Ho, and he took his hand at Umble Gumble or Arkapoo Weeba for the children, and it all got tangled up. The end.
So remember, kids, ask for it by name, and sing this little song after you do. Farkle is good, buy it for me, cause Farkle is something that I want more than life itself. Farkle! Indistinguishable from the real thing.
Some restrictions may apply. Must be 18 inches or over to call. Late charges apply in Canada, Virginia, and your mom's house. For information, dial 555-444-333-287-653-4312, area code 234-128-877-633-PX5G. Do not nibble on Farkle. Keep Farkle at room temperature. Keep Farkle in the freezer. Leave Farkle in direct sunlight for 7 hours. Ooh, pee, me Gombi. That means I wet myself, mommy. Wah. Some assembly required. Please add 4 cents shipping and handling. Shipping and handling not included. Tax included. Shipping included, but not tax on handling. Handling tax. Tax is 4 cents shipping. Ship taxes and 4 ship cents cash COD license. Do not wet yourself. Have a nice day.
But wait! There's more! If you order Farkle now, you'll receive absolutely free a complete set of the Virgin Islands. The Virgin Islands, located in the beautiful Blue Caribbean, make extremely large drink coasters or doorstops. Be the talk of your humdrum neighborhood. All thanks to Farkle. While supplies last.
Listen to WRFU.
Listen to WRFU.
Yeah.
RFU.
On
104.5? On
104.5. Awesome. You want to say it?
Yeah.
WRFU. That was Logan Whitehurst with Farkle. He's our sponsor for today. Now, that came from your first album, right? Is that recording from your first album?
Originally, the idea of the Farkle commercial came from the first album. I did kind of a very short one, maybe like 30 seconds. The one that you played was on a later album, How Does an Electrostatic Motor Work? And I think that was the best one, the most representative Farkle commercial of all of them. Because I've done a few by now.
Yeah, I do enjoy that one a whole lot. I really do. I think that one is really, really clever. But
it stands alone, I think. It's good.
It is good. Now, your first album came out in 1997. You would have been about 19 or 20. And you released 6 albums in 6 years, all except the last one. You released independently. How do you do that?
The first tape that I did was Outsmarting the Popos in, 1997, I didn't really intend for it to be an album. Oh,
yeah.
Sorry?
I said tapes don't exist anymore.
Yeah, no, they and even the ones that I sold back then are probably don't exist anymore. So, it was never intended to really be an album, so I didn't really go into it thinking I was going to have to do some sort of production. Just when I had enough songs, friends were saying, you ought to put them all on a tape and sell them. And so I did, and it went well. I sold all 100 that I made, and then I decided to do another tape because that was fun, and I did I Would Be a Biggest Octopus, and like that just went over pretty well. And then when I was working on the next batch of songs and ideas, mp3.com started up and provided a place for me to put my songs online and get people to listen to them around the country, around the world, really. And it also provided a place where I could have CDs made and sold and shipped without having to put any of my own money forth. so it was really convenient, and I did an album that way, and I sold a bunch, and did another album that way, I sold a bunch.
So, using the internet to your advantage.
Yeah, definitely.
That dot-com boom helped you out.
That was really wonderful. I miss mp3.com.
I would be a biggest octopus.
Okay.
The hell does that title mean?
When I was three, my mother interviewed me into a tape recorder at my grandfather's house, and I have a cassette of that interview, and in the interview I was telling a story about, you know, why I wouldn't like it if there was an earthquake. And she said, well, what would you do if there was an earthquake? And I said, I'd go out of the house and see what it is. And then I started to offer more information. I said, I might go back inside and unshake it. And she said, that'd be a good idea. And I said, and I might hold everything with eight hands. I think I was thinking of like an old Tom and Jerry cartoon or something where things were falling and somebody was catching them with all the different limbs that they had. And then she said, if you had eight hands, what would you be? You know, because she was an educator, and she always wanted to have engaging conversations with the kids and teach at the same time. So I knew that it would be an octopus, and so I said, I would be an octopus. And then just to show how smart I was, I said, and if I had 20 hands, I would be a biggest octopus.
Man, you were a prodigy child. You knew everything before you were like four.
I was very impressionable at that point.
That's good. Impressionable children are fun to hang out with. We're gonna play a track that originated from "I Would Be a Biggest Octopus." Happy Noodle versus Sad Noodle.
Yes.
Well, it's about a very energetic, optimistic guy who lives next door to a pessimistic type, crotchety guy. Where did you get the idea?
The idea came from the title. Some friends and I were having dinner somewhere, and we were talking about restaurants, and they said, somebody was talking about how, you know, Chinese restaurants have these really cute names like Lucky Dragon or Happy Noodle, and then someone said, oh, you should write a song. You should write a song about Happy Noodle. And somebody else was like, yeah, Happy Noodle versus Sad Noodle. And I was like, well, that sounds like as good an idea as any that I've had lately. So,
well, that's a place to start. All right,
yeah,
we're going to check. What's
the
up?
The story just kind of grew from there.
It's an interesting story, and it's a nice personification of wet noodles, I think. Do you imagine them being wet noodles or dry noodles?
You know, I think they're Italian noodles and not Oriental, so they're probably wet noodles. They're,
gotcha.
They've probably got, yeah, sauce.
Fettuccine? Rigatoni?
Most likely.
Fettuccine?
Yeah, fettuccine because they're flat. Maybe linguine because they're kind of flatter, you know?
Linguine, good call. All right, We're going to check this track out, and we'll be back with more with Logan Whitehurst. You're listening to The Jen Cork Show on WRFU.
The sort of life the working stiff dreams about. Driving a Studebaker, making pies with his wife, taking a dip in the old swimming hole. Yes, sir, Happy Noodle had it good and he wasn't complaining. He always smiled and tipped his hat and said, nice weather we're having, regardless of the weather. Now, as most protagonists do, he had an antagonist. Polar opposite, bent on nullifying his happy existence. His name was Sad Noodle, a pathetic excuse for an egg and flour mixture with a little extra water just for tears. He worked in a successful firm and was under a lot of stress, and this is the story of their ultimate battle.
Happy Noodle versus Sad Noodle. Happy Noodle versus Sad Noodle.
Happy Noodle
Noodle was out mowing the lawn with a smile and a song, and Edsel pulled up in front of the house. It was Sad Noodle. He leaned his ruby head out the window and said, "Look, Happy Noodle, I'm sick of being your polar opposite. You know, sad all the time and whatnot. It makes it hard to get along. I've come to challenge you to a duel to the death." Happy Noodle put down the mower and obliged, saying, "If it'll make you happy," and Sad Noodle cringed. He opted in the back seat and they were off to the gravel pit. Happy Noodle singing all the way and Sad Noodle driving like a madman. "This'll end it all," thought Sad Noodle, and they prepared for the fight. Strange sight, two noodles standing face to face, one smiling and one frowning.
Happy Noodle versus Sad Noodle. Happy Noodle versus Sad, Sad Noodle. Happy Noodle.
Dropped Happy Noodle off at his door and said, "You know what? I don't think that helped me very much." And Happy Noodle said, "Sad Noodle, why don't you come in for some pie?" And Sad Noodle said, "No, I'm sorry, I don't like pie that much, but thanks all the same."
Happy Noodle versus Sad Noodle. Happy Noodle versus Sad, Sad Noodle. Happy Noodle versus Sad Noodle. Happy Noodle versus Sad, Sad, Sad Noodle.
Happy Noodle versus Sad Noodle. We got Logan Whitehurst on the line.
Oh, daddy!
Not yet. Heck yeah.
Who was that?
I don't know. Can you still do that voice? I'm putting you on the spot.
Perhaps I can.
Perhaps you can. You don't want
what's,
to.
What's the line?
Hey, daddy.
Oh, daddy!
Awesome. Awesome. You totally just made my day. I'm not joking with you. but that... Happy Noodle vs. Sad Noodle came out in 1998, and that was a big year for you. You toured. Did you tour? Did you open one show for Frank Black and the Catholics?
That was a one show in Petaluma at the Phoenix Theater.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was actually my first show, and I had no idea what I was doing.
And then that was your very first show solo.
Yeah.
So your very first show solo. You're playing for Frank Black before Frank Black and the Catholics.
Yeah, and the guy from Polaris who did the theme song for The Adventures of Pete and Pete.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's
huge. It was a big show for me.
That's incredible. How did the show go?
It went okay. It wasn't super heavily attended, but it
doesn't matter.
There were a few hundred people there, yeah. It was
That's pretty heavily attended.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was okay for that, especially for that theater.
That year, also, you played concertina for Les Claypool backstage at a concert.
Right.
Did you get a good review?
I think I did. I was working security backstage. It was the same theater, just a different day. I brought my concertina because I was kind of a concertina geek at the time. And he saw it, and he was asking me to... He asked me to play it. He's like, "Do you know how to play that thing?" And I was like, "Oh, a little bit." And so I played the song that Sean Connery sings in Darby O'Gill and the Little People.
Oh, nice.
And he knew the words, and he started to sing it, and he danced.
Wow.
I thought that was funny.
You made Les Claypool dance.
And sing.
Wow. He was like your puppet for a minute.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, he was acting it out and everything and pointing at people in the crowd and stuff. Like, I mean, there were people hanging around backstage. And like, "Oh, she is my dear, my darling one," so on and so on.
Nice. Yeah. And right after that, I mean, as if that stuff's not cool enough, right after that is when you started getting a lot of attention. We started talking before about MP3.com.
Right.
In 1999, correct me if I'm wrong, you released two albums, How Does an Electrostatic Motor Work, and Denture Doorknob Mini Album.
Right.
And especially Electrostatic, those got you, you started to get a lot of notice. Talk about your experience with MP3.com and how that helped you out.
That helped me out immensely with finding an audience and getting my music out to people that I wanted to show it to, and allowing me to have product that I could sell and actually make some money doing it, without having to make the big investments that people make in recording and duplicating equipment and stuff like that.
How did you end up so cool on MP3.com?
I'm sorry?
How did you end up so cool?
Well, my song, Monkeys Are Bad People, I decided to list that as a comedy song as opposed to the rest of my songs. I really wanted to list them as, like, independent or alternative songs or children's songs or something like that. And it enjoyed some popularity on the comedy charts, which weren't huge at the time. There weren't a whole lot of songs on there. So it was already getting some attention. But then all of a sudden, Tom Green was doing the Tom Green Show at the time on MTV. And he came out with the Bum Bum song where, it was like this horrible, horrible song, like poorly written. And just...
He's a class act, that Tom Green.
Yeah, he's an interesting fellow.
Definitely.
But my bum is on the cheese, my bum is on the cheese. If I get lucky, I might get a disease kind of thing. It's like his whole point was, it doesn't matter what you say in the song as long as you have the publicity to sell it. And so he was like, everybody who's watching my show right now, go to mp3.com, go to the comedy chart, and download the Bum Bum song and make it the number one song on mp3.com. So everybody who was watching the show went and did that, also saw Monkeys Are Bad People at the top of the chart, and it was like number three for the couple of months that the Bum Bum song was number one, and people just kind of downloaded everything. And I think I got a whole lot of fans that way. I started getting thousands of downloads.
So you have a vulgar Canadian to thank for some of your success.
Doesn't everyone?
It's true. It's very true. That's how I got my job. So it's understandable.
Thanks, Jacques.
Yeah, Jacques, indeed. I'm going to play Monkeys Are Bad People. I'm also going to play right after it your song Calculator Love, which came out that year as well for the first time.
Okay.
And I want to play that because I think it's a perfect song for Valentine's Day, which is coming up. Have you ever bought anyone a calculator for Valentine's Day?
No.
Would you recommend
it? They don't make heart-shaped calculators.
Now, that would be cute. That would sell. No, that would definitely sell to junior high girls who think math is lame. I think you've got a good marketing idea. I think you've got something good there. All right, Monkeys Are Bad People and Calculator Love. We're on the line with Logan Whitehurst on WRFU. This is the Jen Cork Show. We'll be back with Logan and some more on his career.
Hey, Daddy.
Yes, son?
I found a monkey. Care to keep it?
God, no, son! Get that monkey out of here!
Why, Daddy?
Why? Let me explain, son. There comes a time in every young man's life when he needs to be coaxed out of his womb of innocence.
Womb of innocence?
Just sit right here, son. Your mother and I have been talking, and we think it's time you learned the truth.
Daddy, you're not back on the medication.
Son, underneath all that cute, cuddly, human-like veneer lies the seed of evil.
Why do you have to sing, Daddy?
I know the truth hurts. Listen up, here's why you can't have that monkey. Monkeys can't be trusted with your business. They're sneaky and dishonest through and through. Monkeys can't speak English, so they can't tell the truth. Monkeys are bad people, and so are you.
Honestly, I don't see why I'm a bad person. Just
quiet, son. That's just the first verse. Add a K to money, you get monkey. Yes, you do. Monkey may see, but monkey don't pay his due. The love of evolution has its
was a monkey, too big to be kept in a zoo, which is not a bad thing, cause he liked to fling thousand-pound fistfuls of stinky old King Kong poo.
That's disgusting, that is.
Quiet now, here comes the harmonica solo. Better be careful, that ape will brainwash you. Monkeys make amore out in public, providing little children with a view. They're lewd and they're indecent, and there's nothing we can do. Monkeys are bad.
Come on, monkey.
I'm afraid I can't let you do that, son. Give him here. I'll dispose of him in a proper manner.
What? Hey, don't do that! Get him, monkey! Turn him, monkey! Get him! Don't dash him in the back! Don't piss on! Not my eye!
You're listening to WRFU, Radio Free Urbana, coming to you live from the downtown post office, delivering you the mental mail, shaken but not stirred. Where's my trailer? I can't work under these conditions.
I think that you've tapped into something that's, I think, really marketable, which is the helium voice. Everyone loves the helium voice.
That's true. Everyone does love the helium voice.
That's why Kanye West is so popular, because he puts the helium voice in the back of every song.
I think he got the idea from me.
I think you are so right. He owes you some money and a Grammy. So, yeah, that song came out in 99, and I love that song. It's so cute. And I wanted to talk.
It's one of the few sentimental love ballads that I've ever written.
Right on.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that when you put Monkeys Are Bad People on MP3.com, you kind of reluctantly put it under the comedy heading. You don't like to think of yourself as a comedy artist.
No, I think it's kind of limiting when you say that you're a comedy artist, because then people go, oh, all right, then your songs are funny. And then, like, if you write a song that's not really meant to be funny, people are disappointed. And so you kind of have to keep writing things that are funny in order for people to think that you're good at what you do. And I really would rather just be an eccentric musician who has kind of silly songs, you know, rather than somebody who's always trying to be funny.
But you also had kind of a serious outlet with your indie rock outfits. You first got together with Little Tin Frog. Was that your first band?
Right, yeah. Well, that was not technically my first band, but the first band that really went out and played a bunch of shows and had a van.
That's the mark, is the van. You need the van. That's what makes you a band.
Is probably one of the most important things a band can have.
It's true.
Is the van.
In fact, I think you need the van before the instruments. That's just my philosophy.
I think everyone who has a van should start a band just because they already have the van.
Right on. No, that's very, very true. I think that's a good philosophy. Then after Little Tin Frog, you had the secret band. That was a short project, right?
Right. A quick, we did one album because MP3 was, this was 1999 as well. MP3.com was making it real easy to just put your songs up and put a CD out, so we could do the entire process by recording the songs ourselves and putting them up on the internet without telling anybody, and then seeing what happened from there. And that was me and Judah, who was the bass player in Little Tin Frog at the time. And then Little Tin Frog broke up, and in summer of 2000, Judah and I decided to do the secret band as a live band, and we called it the Velveteen, and we got another bass player, and Velveteen's been going strong since then.
And that was your big deal indie rock band. You guys did a lot of recordings. You got pretty far. You were playing showcases for labels and stuff with the Velveteen.
Right.
How was that experience? Did you have a lot of groupies and fans and people coming to the shows and doing tours and stuff like that? Were you living the band dream?
Well, we had plenty of fans. I think when I left the band a couple of years ago, we were just at that point where groupies started to actually appear.
You missed the boat.
Yeah, definitely.
You missed the boat on the groupies.
I know. I feel bad.
Oh, no, that's all right.
I got to get back to that.
Yeah, you do. You got to have the groupies. And some of your shows, some famous people saw the Velveteen play at some points. One of your showcases, Rick Rubin and Jack Osborne were in the audience. How was it? How do you remember meeting them?
Yeah, I remember I met Jack Osborne. I was mostly impressed because he was Ozzy Osborne's son, and not so much that he was on the Osbournes, because that was just starting then. I think when I met Jack Osborne, I'd heard of the idea of the TV show of the Osbournes, but I'd never seen it. But Rick Rubin, he was a very large man. He's very tall. And he, according to the people who set up the showcases, they were really surprised that he showed up, because he just doesn't normally do that sort of thing. So it was kind of a privilege to get to meet him in that way.
Just for the Velveteen. And then I believe it was a couple years later, the Velveteen had a song actually featured on The Sorority Life on MTV.
What happened was they took our album called Out of the Fierce Parade, and MTV licensed the entire album to be background music for The Sorority Life. They would take parts of the songs that didn't have lyrics and just kind of loop them and play them in the back. After Sorority Life ended its, 25-year glorious run, they used our songs on Fraternity Life, and then they used it in most of the episodes of that Bam Margera show, that Viva La Bam.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that usually if I watch an episode of Viva La Bam, which is pretty rarely, but if I ever do, I usually hear some Velveteen in the background somewhere.
That's got to make you feel cool. Your drums are on a nationally known TV show.
I know. I go and I watch. We actually had a music video in like 2002, 2003. We have a couple of music videos, but the first one we did was for a song called Radiopathy, and that ended up on MTV2. And a friend sent me a picture that he'd taken of the TV while the video was playing. So there's a picture of me playing the drums, and down in the corner of the TV is that little M2 logo.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very cool. You should make a poster out of that thing.
I probably should.
So you were hanging out with the Velveteen. You guys were starting to play some good shows, and you started doing some different stuff creatively with your music. You released Goodbye My 4-Track, which was your first release on an actual label.
Yeah, Pandaside Records.
And you didn't actually ditch the 4-track.
No, the song Goodbye My 4-Track, the whole idea was just kind of a, you know, this is just a lot of work. I'm never going to write any more songs again. And then I thought maybe I should write a song about how I'm not going to write any more songs with the 4-track. Just to be funny.
But of course, you continue to write many, many songs.
Yes, definitely.
So we're going to play a track from that in a little bit, but I want to talk about right after you released Goodbye My 4-Track, you're starting to tour with the Velveteen, stuff's going really good. You had to quit making music. What happened?
Yes. Around November of 2003, symptoms started to show that I had some kind of illness, and I couldn't figure out what it was, and nobody seemed to have any idea, and I went to a number of doctors, and the symptoms started getting worse and worse, and I decided that I was going to have to leave the situation I was in and go back and stay with my parents so that I wouldn't have to take care of myself through the symptoms while I went to doctors and figured out what it was. Ultimately, I had to quit the Velveteen because I wasn't going to be able to go on tour or practice or even play anymore because the symptoms were so bad. I was, you know, throwing up and getting these migraine headaches and stuff. And then May of 2004, they diagnosed me with a large brain tumor, and after that, I kind of had to stop making music and art in order to recuperate. Last December, they told me that after all the radiation and chemotherapy that I had done, that I was in remission finally. So now I'm ready to get back on focusing on creative stuff.
So you're still in remission, you're bouncing back, you're getting your creative juices going again?
I'm trying, yeah.
You got some projects.
I appreciate being able to come on the radio after such a long time of kind of being in hiding, you know?
Oh, not a problem. You got some projects going on. What are you working on right now?
I'm doing the soundtrack for an independent film called Replica, and I did the theme song for an internet-based cartoon series called Beano the Elephant that my friend is putting together, and I have lots of ideas for producing new songs, and I have some new instruments that I've collected over the last couple of years, like a new organ and some new string stuff like a ukulele and whatever.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
And the Junior Science Club, still going strong?
Still going strong, as far as I know.
That's cool. Now, you've kind of a sidekick in the Junior Science Club. He's not necessarily, would you call him a flesh and blood sidekick?
He's, I don't even know what substance I could classify him as, because his name is Vanilla, and he's a plastic snowman, and sometimes he's made of snow, and sometimes he's made of plastic, and it just depends on, it's kind of like that scene in Roger Rabbit where it's like, only when it's funny, you know. So Sometimes he's made of snow when it's funniest to be made of snow, and sometimes he's made of plastic.
He's kind of an angry dude, right?
He's disenfranchised, really.
Disenfranchised.
He's not so much angry as he is frustrated. He's so creative and he's so prolific that he actually made, produced, and can and does take credit for producing and making and writing and everything and performing every known song in the world by any band, and nobody gives them the credit or even the time of day.
So every song ever made was Vanilla the Snowman.
Yeah, Vanilla the Plastic Snowman. He's very, very talented and very underappreciated.
Gotcha. Now, I had a question from one of your fans, Michael. He wanted to know how one goes about joining the Junior Science Club. He says Vanilla said something about giving him $1 million. He wasn't sure what to
do.
Well,
Vanilla would say that, but I wouldn't pay him $1 million because it's free to join this Junior Science Club. All you have to do is listen to the music or, play on one of the albums or something.
And you're
then you're officially a member.
Gotcha. And he also, Michael wanted to know if you're planning on re-releasing any of your albums. He specifically asked about how an electrostatic motor works and Earth is Big. But where can we find your albums? And if we can't, are we going to be able to find them again soon?
Right now, temporarily, you can go to my MySpace page at myspace.com.
/Logan Whitehurst.
Logan Whitehurst. And there are images of the different albums that I've put out. The first two albums, Outsmartin' the Popos and I Would Be a Biggest Octopus, I'm giving away all those tracks as MP3s for free if you click on those covers. And there are samples like of random songs from How Does an Electrostatic Motor Work and Earth is Big, because I'm planning to re-release those on a real small basis, not really on a label, but I want people to be able to get those in CD form, and I'll be making those on my own when I have the space and the equipment to do so.
Nice. Very cool.
Yeah.
That's really, really cool. And you have a website, loganwhitehurst.com, and on the website you have a ton of artwork. That's all drawn by you, correct?
A majority of it. As far as I know, yeah, I think everything on there was done by me.
Because the thing that we haven't mentioned yet, that besides being this eclectic musician, you're also an incredible artist. You majored in printmaking in college, and you're really into drawing. You do a lot of artwork. What do you enjoy doing most with art, and what do you enjoy drawing most?
Well, I have a style of drawing. I like to be very small and precise, and lots of cross-hatching and black and white stuff, very printmaking-y sort of drawing. I'm not really versed in painting or charcoal or stuff. I still have room to learn all the different things you can do in artwork, but right now, I don't really have a favorite subject, but my style, I really do like to get in really intricate and draw very very fidgety little things.
Now, let me ask you a tough question. If you have to give up one, art or music, which one? You can only keep one.
If I could only keep one, I would keep the artwork, I think, because... that's the option that I would probably pick.
Right on. That's very, very cool. That's very cool.
The music is a lot of fun, but I think there's more chance of me being able to find a good, really good use for my artwork than there may be. Because with artwork, you don't need the kind of audience that you need in order to be successful in music.
Right on.
And there are a couple more options, probably.
Right on. Very cool. Well, it has been awesome talking to you, Logan. We're going to close out with your song Robot Cat from the Goodbye My Four-Track album. And Logan, I expect awesome things from you in the near future. That's why I wanted you to come on the show. And you are welcome back anytime. Next time you got something to release or something new going on, you just give us a call and we're on it.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Not a problem. It has been an incredible pleasure talking to you. And I wish you luck in the near future.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate it.
You enjoy your time in Los Baños.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Logan, for being on the show. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Logan Whitehurst, everybody. Logan Whitehurst in the Junior Science Club. Don't forget to check him out at loganwhitehurst.com or his MySpace page, myspace.com/LoganWhitehurst. Closing out the show with Robot Cat from the album Goodbye My Four Track. You have been listening to The Jen Cork Show on WRFU, LP Urbana. Mariama is in next. I'm out. And I'll see you next Wednesday. Have a good Valentine's Day.
Knocking on my door, it's a postman bringing me 1,000 more, cause I'm building me an army and I'm going to war. Say,
this is my moment, this is my hour, the robot cat is my ticket to power. Better get ready for the cat invasion, world domination, that's the occasion. They're better and stronger and smarter and faster, soon everybody will be calling me master. The human surrender, and that'll be that. I'll say, welcome to the planet of the robot cat. So when I say robot,